Hello. I have successfully avoided this moment. I didn't think it was 10 years, but it does seem like a long time. Anyway, he finally got his man, and I didn't even put up a fight. He just phoned me up and said, I thought, oh, it's Paul. You'd normally text, probably, but he's going to ask me to speak. He says, oh, it's that time, I'm going to ask you to speak. I went, yeah, right. And that was it. And it was like so undramatic. I was kind of like, oh, man. And so the last 6 weeks or so for me have been pretty stressful. So I'm fairly tense now, but nothing like what I was in the last week. So Joe is really looking forward to this being done. So you can have me back. But I have enjoyed being in, you know, in the scriptures and looking at this passage, and I'm hoping that we can, like, my biggest desire is that your faith will be built through this, and that that God will speak to you. So, as it's no secret, let's crack on. We're in Hebrews. Our passage is chapter 2, first 4 verses. So it's a little bit heavyweight. It's the first warning in Hebrews. There we go. We must pay more careful attention to what we have heard, or else we'll drift away from it, since the message angels provided proved to be reliable and every disobedience received a just retribution. How shall we escape if we neglect such a great salvation? It was declared at first by the Lord, and it was attested to us by those who heard, while God also bore witness with signs, wonders, and various miracles, and by gifts of the Holy Spirit according to his will. So that's what we're going to look at. It comes straight off the back of chapter 1, which is no surprise, because it's chapter 2. But there's a significant link there. So as we alluded to, this is not my day job. So my normal way of life is in the ambulance service. So I, for many years now, I've been a paramedic. And one of the mainstays of my skill set is resuscitation, which is, you know, it's pretty full on. It's one of those skills that you kind of like, everyone has to be drilled down, has to be good. You can't rock up into somebody's home and have a chat with them. You have to know it, and you have to respond, and you have to. It's pretty serious. It's kind of like, you know, it's about as serious as it gets. And so they drill us on it. And so, especially in the early years when I started, you'd go to training school. I've been doing it like over 20 years now, so lots has changed over the years. It was residential training school, and they used to have these resuscitation dolls, like, and they'd mark you. So if your compressions weren't deep enough, you'd get marked down. It'd measure everything you did. So you had to get a 5-minute ticket that was perfect. So as a technician, you could get 90%. One or two could be slightly shallow, or your recoil could be slightly wrong, or your timing slightly off. But for paramedics, it was like 100%. Your compressions, ventilation's got to be perfect. And you didn't get another chance. So you had to do 5 minutes perfect, and you had to have that ticket, or you'd fail. And so, because it was residential, you'd just spend hours, literally hours and hours, trying to get this perfect ticket. And what it meant was you just got really, really good at it. Your hands were sore as anything, but you got really good at it. And then 2 years later, you'd have to requalify, go back, and do it all again. And so there's a real strong emphasis on it. Over the years, there's still a strong emphasis on it, but over the years, training has changed, and you get more experience. You go to training school. Now it's just 2 days a year instead of 2 weeks. It's PowerPoint. And recess would come up, and the instructor would come in, and he'd look at the class, and he'd go, oh, you're a fairly experienced group. You should be able to do recess by now. We'd be like, yeah, we should be able to do that. We've done it. We're pretty good. We can do this. And then another year would go by, and you'd be like, oh, will they make us do recess? Will they make us do this performance again? Go over it. And you'd be like, oh, this instructor will be all right. He'll be like, he'll let us off. And he would. And we'd be like, yeah, good. Breathe a sigh of relief. We're all right. We're doing all right. And then over the years, you just kind of go, recess is on the list, but they won't make us do it. We know what we're doing. And then last year, it was in the weekly briefing, the weekly propaganda, we call it. And it says, we're doing recess, and it's pass or fail. If you mess this up, you're going back to training school. Everything's on the line. It's like, oh, you can't do that to us. You can't lull us into this false sense of security for like 20 years and then suddenly make it pass or fail. So they did. And we all got a bit stressed. We were a bit worried. We were like, oh, no, we're going to have to get our head in the books. We're going to have to really, like, work out what we're supposed to be doing. And we should know it anyway. But, you know, as you get your head in the books, you go, oh, a few details there. There's been a few updates, been a few things. Like, anyway, fortunately, the day came and it went and we passed. Still got a job. That's good. And but there were some benefits in the stress. So we got better. We were sharper. It made you pay attention. It made you get back in to your protocol, get back into what you should be. It's what you should do. It's what you are. It's why you exist as a paramedic, so you can do that skill. So you benefit because you're sharper. Your crewmate benefits because, you know, you're less of a passenger. Nobody wants to be working with a dead weight, do they? So, you know, it's teamwork. He benefits, they benefit, she benefits. Service benefits, they get less serious instances, less reports in the weekly briefing. And obviously, most importantly, the patient benefits, because they get what they should be getting, and you are functioning, you're functioning as you should function. And so whilst this is a slightly uncomfortable passage, I think it maybe speaks to us about something. It makes us feel a bit uncomfortable because it's a warning, but a warning is there for a reason. And sometimes the stress and the discomfort of something that somebody says can focus our attention and focus our mind and bring out things in you that, you know, maybe in our case, we're just very familiar. Maybe we've been Christians for a long time. We're very familiar with the truth. We're very familiar with our great salvation, and it is great. Maybe we're familiar with parts of it and not other parts. Some of it we get, other bits are a bit more complex. Hebrews will speak into that a great deal. But either way, we can become comfortable. We can make sense of our faith through various systems. They're not bad to sort of organize our thoughts that way. But we can sort of make it nice and understandable and comfortable and just get used to it. And I think this passage kind of speaks into that a little bit and says, look, remember, pay careful attention. This is what I had to do in a recess. I had to go back to stuff I knew already, stuff that was part of my repertoire already, but pay careful attention to it because the test had come. So, like I say, I think God has something to say to us in this. And if we look at the context in which this writer was writing to, the people he was writing to, he was writing to Jews. They knew their Old Testaments. They knew the scriptures. They knew the Old Testament scriptures. And they'd also got knowledge of Jesus. So some of them may have been first-hand witnesses of what Jesus said. The writer in the passage says, you know, some Jesus, this message came from the Lord. Some of you are eyewitnesses or witnesses of what he said. And it was also borne out by God putting his stamp of authority on it with signs and wonders and various miraculous gifts, miraculous workings. And so that was, for those Jews, that would have rung some bells in terms of the law that they followed would have been, that was inaugurated with signs and wonders, like coming out of the Exodus, the first covenant had God's mark on it. But these Jews were Christians. They had suffered a bit, and they were possibly going to suffer a little bit more. Maybe they were getting a bit wobbly, and this writer is writing to them to say, look, pay careful attention to what you've heard so that you don't drift away from it. It would be easy for them. They had something that was rubber stamped by God, like the Old Testament and the law. It came through the Jews. It was mediated by angels. That's pretty heavy weight. It would be easy to drift back to that. But he's saying, no, you got Jesus has spoken now. That's the point of chapter 1. Jesus has spoken, and he goes to much length to demonstrate where Jesus is seen in that. So I didn't hear Andrew's talk on chapter 1 last week. But the writer to Hebrews in chapter 1 points out all the places it's written about Jesus. So he lifts Jesus out of that passage. And he says, look, and combine it with what you have heard. And so one of the things is that it's sometimes when God speaks, it's not always that clear. So the Jews, for instance, they were waiting for the Messiah, and they would have diligently looked through their Old Testament, the scriptures, And they missed it. When Jesus came, he wasn't what they were expecting. He was completely different. But what was written about him was true. When they look back, and this is what the writer of the Hebrews is doing, he's going, look, he's here in these various passages. Look how it differentiates between him and the angels. That's where it is. Now, combine that with what you have heard.